Spring turkey season is upon us, and don't be caught out in the woods without having Onyx Hunt on your phone. One feature Onyx has that is often overlooked for turkey hunting is their recent imagery filter with their elite memberships. This imagery is updated week to week, and it comes in extremely handy, especially when you're trying to find these gobble zones where these turkeys will go out in a high spot on a fresh clear cut and strut around all day long. Actually, I was just looking at it on Onyx where the timber company just came into Andrew's Club and did a very small clear cut along this creek. And I can see the high spots on the topographical map, but also I can see exactly where they mulch. And those are going to be hot spots for finding gobblers, especially mid-morning after they get off their hens, getting up on these little high spots in this fresh, small clear cut along the creek and strutting and gobbling all day long. If you want to give Onyx a try, you can actually download it for free, try it for 7 days. And if you decide to purchase, you can use the promo code Southern and save on your premium and elite memberships. So going into this turkey season, know where you stand with Onyx.
Look, y'all know we harp on it a lot. You need a good pair of binos. Yeah, I never hunted with binos until I was almost into my 20s. I never did it when I was a teenager or anything like that, or when I was a kid, we never had binos. And when I bought my first pair of Vortex binos, the first binos I ever purchased back in like 2015, it immediately made a huge difference for me, especially in the turkey woods. So give yourself the advantage of a good pair of binos this spring, whether you're looking for more of like an entry-level bino like the Vortex Diamondbacks or something really, really nice like the Razors. Vortex is going to have something for you. And hey, don't pay full price for it. Use our discount code at eurooptic.com. Use the code SGN10 to get a discount on any Vortex optics that you want to order. Again, that's eurooptic.com, code SGN10 to go get a discount on any Vortex product you order. If you live in the Gulf Coast region, you need to find yourself at the EcoWild Expo May 10th through the 12th in Mobile. It is the premier outdoor expo for the Gulf Coast region, and we're going to be there. We're going to have a booth. We're super excited about it. Can't wait to meet you guys that live down there. We absolutely love the Gulf Coast region, so to be a part of this show, we're super excited about. We're going to have past podcast guests there at our booth for you to talk to, guys who are relevant for your area, who you can talk to, you can pick their brain, you can joke with them, laugh with them, tell them your story, whatever you want to do. It's going to be an awesome time. We're already working on some past podcast guests, but hey, if you live in this area and you have a suggestion for someone you want to see at that show, write in and we'll see if we can get them. There's going to be all kinds of exhibitors at the show that are focused on hunting, fishing, conservation, and recreation. There's going to be activities for the whole family there. They got axe throwing, archery. They're going to have our podcast booth. And then for the kids, they got touch tanks, a honeybee exhibition, a raptor show, kids fishing tank, BB gun range, and a butterfly house. So you're going to love it. Your kids are going to love it. It's going to be an awesome time. So head on over to ecowildexpo.com to get more information on the show and to go ahead and grab your tickets. And hey, mark it on your calendar. May 10th through the 12th. Be there. We want to see you and we're excited to talk to you. So we'll see you at the EcoWild Expo this May 10th through the 12th at the Mobile Convention Center in Mobile, Alabama.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. We're sitting here at the headquarters of Houndstooth Game Calls. Mr. Lyle Gilbert. Lyle, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys.
I'm excited to be here, man. This one's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it has. It has been a long time
coming. Yeah. Jacob, how you doing over there?
Oh, doing well. I'm super excited.
I saw him combing that beard earlier, getting ready for this.
Yeah, you know. I'm on camera, but, you know. Gotta look good. No, I'm excited. So this episode, it's kind of funny enough. So Lyle, when we first started the podcast back in 2018, you were one of the first guys we recorded with for a turkey episode. It's probably like episode like 5 or 6, something like that, like super early on.
That was a long time ago.
And us being so new, that card got corrupted. When Andrew went to do the edit on that, it was like, oh, there's no file here. And we kind of went back and forth about, oh, well, we're going to need to re-record at some point. And now we look 5 years later and we're finally doing it.
I remember you telling me about it, you know, getting corrupted and all. Look, it happens. We're better at what we're all doing now. So, hey, here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot's changed since then. Yeah.
Look, I think we were recording back then on a stand microphone, like one from Amazon is like $100.
Yep.
And we had the foam stacked up on like books or something next to it and had you on speakerphone and we're recording into that.
That's exactly how we did it.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Hey, I go back and listen to some of those old episodes sometimes, and the audio quality was not bad. I'm like, dang. Well,
relatively speaking. Yeah, no, I can't go back. I cringe every time I listen to those first 50 episodes. Like, oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Anytime someone's like, yeah, I started listening to episode 48, I'm like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, God bless you.
It took us 120 episodes to figure out how to not suck at it.
Well, you got it going on. You got a good following, good name. Heck, I enjoy listening to it. I've learned a lot from it.
I appreciate it, man. Well, let's talk a little bit about Houndstooth. I mean, you got a good thing going on here. You got a nice little shop going on. This is the first time we've been here, and it's pretty impressive, man. You got this place stacked out.
Yeah, it's stacked out now. It won't be stacked out here in a few more weeks, but we've been here. Heck, I've been in I've been right here in this shop for about 3 years. So it's grown, and y'all can see there's boxes everywhere. So we need a little room.
we're going to talk a lot of public land turkey hunting here and kind of how you cut your teeth on national forest. But before we kind of do all that, I'm curious about, you know, from owning a call company and, you know, turkey hunting and y'all's turkey calls are like such a big part of what y'all do. What is, when we're doing deer hunting content, what does it look like here building calls and everything, getting ready for springtime?
Man, it is. First of all, I've got a pretty good crew of young people that come in here and work, and you know they do some of the. When you come in here, there'll be pots laid out across here. We'll be, you know, I'm usually one gluing. I can't let them do like just everything, but like packaging and my wife now, she's quit hair.
Yes,
she was a hairdresser for 28 years, and she is now finally quit the hair business, and she is full-time turkey call mom here in the shop to all the young folks. And she will have this thing, it'll look like a manufacturing line down through there, and I just kind of just direct me where I need to be or what I need to do, or hand me what I need to do. And I'm generally cutting calls and building like mouth calls and stuff, and so it's crazy around here from November all the way to about the 1st of May. So it's a big undertaking.
No, that's awesome. I mean, I that's the one thing I guess people don't realize from like call companies, especially like you, that, you know, you're trying to build inventory for orders that are coming out.
That's,
you know,
right.
Going into like, you know, late winter, early spring, where some people, like, you know, your diehard turkey hunters, they're thinking about turkeys 365. We're like the average guy, myself included, it's like, you know, hardcore deer. Then it gets about, you know, first week of February, like, oh, dude, it's time to switch gears and get ready. Where you guys are doing that so much sooner than everybody else is, just to try to catch up on orders and then get ready for even the online orders and everything else. So,
you're exactly right. Because when May rolls around, we're not thinking, you know, oh, turkey season's over. We're automatically switching gears, and we're rebuilding for the next spring. So, and it'll take me the whole entire summer, and we just never stop. That's the only way I have learned to be able to be ahead of the curve. Like, we had our best NWTF convention. Every year it's grown. And then when we come back and start putting stuff back on the shelves, and I mean, it's literally like packing up the shop and going there. It looks like we haven't been anywhere. And that's when I know, hey, I'm doing it right. Because I have been in there when I came in there and I didn't have nothing to put on the shelf. And I was here all night, you know, like 7 days a week. And, you know, I'm 46 years old. My wife's 47. I can't do the 2 and 3 a.m.s anymore. I really can't. I've done too many of them. So it's we never stop thinking about the turkey.
Well, again, before we get into a lot of this, you know, public land hunting and kind of your background, I want to talk about, first of all, like, how long has Houndstooth been around, and what was the inspiration for starting Houndstooth?
Well, we've been around 12 years or so, and the inspiration for Houndstooth, it came, and that's kind of where your podcast with Matt, all that collided with me and Matt, you know, beginning to know each other. Matt wound up, I was actually, before I really knew Matt, what really got it started going was I was at junior college in Scuba, Mississippi, and I needed a part-time job. And a friend of mine, which is a one of my best friends now, Chris Crow, owned a company called Magnolia Steel out of Meridian, Mississippi. And I worked my way in there, working just odd jobs on the farm. And then I started taking deer hunters, and then which, you know, we entertained in the construction field. And it came to a point where I started taking a few turkey hunters, which I loved. That was my favorite. Anyway, that's what I was made for. And I was actually leaving. I was graduating junior college, and I was leaving Scuba, Mississippi, come back to Tuscaloosa, and I got a phone call from Chris. He said, "Hey, would you like to take over this farm?" I was like, "What? Take over your farm and be over it and the hunting and everything?" So I did. I moved right back to Scuba. And from then, for the next 10 years, that's what I did. I mean, that's pretty much was my job. I took care of everything, you know, turkey hunters, deer hunters, the fishermen, managed the place, kept the lodge up. And that's that in a nutshell is what really kicked off that, you know, hey, I turkey hunted every day almost. Always had somebody take. So that kind of kicked off that vibe of wanting to build a turkey call. And so I met my wife. I ended up moving to Tuscaloosa to have a little bit better life, kids. I had a stepson. And anyway, since I moved back, part of that property ended up was another landowner that was leased. And my good friend dropped that lease, and that family had 8,000 acres on the Knoxville River, and they wanted to outfit. So I ended up back there on the weekends guiding, and Matt joined forces there guiding as well. And man, by that time, I'd already dabbled into, you know, making. I had a neighbor that was a excellent woodworker, and he taught me. You know, I said, "Hey, let's build a tube call." Built a tube call. Ended up building a box call, building a pot call. Then I started finding a little bit more into the mouth call stuff. Started doing the mouth calls, and after that, it just Houndstooth was kind of born. And you know, heck, I was buying timber at the time as a procurement forester for a company out of Greensboro. Every landowner you met that had any land, they had turkeys. And what better, you know, hey, I'm going to cut you a little timber, and you want to buy a few turkey calls? The next thing you know, you're turkey hunting with them and buying their timber. So you can't beat that. I mean, that goes hand in hand there. I mean, so it, I also ended up with an angle on buying timber. but it as the timber, as I, you know, kept on with my career in timber, it got to a point where it was literally, my wife came home one day and I had an air compressor in my kitchen, and it was, you know, it was just blowing air out the thing. I was whipping out mouth calls on my new hydraulic Cadillac press, and she looked at me, she said, "You got to have a shop." And it was at that time I was like, man, I've come from here, out of my garage and in my kitchen and my office. My house was horrible. It was turkey. You couldn't turn without looking at a piece of, you know, a turkey call, latex, some wood, some pots. And it just, man, I was lucky. I ended up, I get tickled. I was told somebody the other day, there was a thing I watched about, it was Steve Harvey of all people. And he was giving his little thing about jumping, like take the jump. Because if you don't take a jump, you're going to fall. You're never going to know. Mm-hmm. And if you fall on your face, it's all right. You get right back up, jump again. And I took that big jump. It was like my little life story right there that I knew, that I didn't know would ever become what it has and bring the people into my life that it has. And here we are. It's really, somebody the other day was like, "Man, you think I can What if you had to do it over again? There's no way I could do it over again. I don't know how I got here now. Think about it. Think about when y'all started, you know, to get your name out there. Facebook ain't the same Facebook to get your name out there. It's pay to play. And now that dollar doesn't spend like it used to.
That's right,
to get your name out there. So there's a huge curve that other small businesses now are trying to fight to grow and just, you know, to get their name out there. So it's, I would love to say I'm some smart businessman and maybe I have made some right decisions to get here, and I guess I have, but I don't know how to do it again.
It's almost like you got to be so young and dumb just to like take the jump and like, you know, you fail. It's not that big of a deal.
When it came down to day one and my wife was like, well, what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm going to find a shop. She says, when are you going to find a shop? I said, right when I get back from Ohio from turkey hunting with Dr. Childs. She's like, what? I'm like, hey, got to do it.
And see, that's the cool thing when you start talking to guys like yourself, and you know, we've interviewed like Mike Pentecost too, and it's like you talk to guys that had this idea and created a business out of it, and then kind of look up in like every 5-10 years how things have changed. Because I mean, y'all been going for roughly about 12 years now. It's crazy to kind of see like what's the next 10 to 12 years look like. And again, like, you know, just being die hard with it, but also having the leap of faith, kind of like me doing the podcast, and not to kind of get segue or, you know, switch the show from being like this, you know, turning content and everything to kind of like the life lessons. But it's like you jump to the podcast and do that full time and take a massive pay cut. But it was one of those things, like, you know, I told Andrew, like, if it fails, don't make any money. And for, you know, just not being successful, I'll go back to doing sales like I did previously and been extremely successful with, not that big of a deal. But again, I have a lot more fun doing this than I did, you know, making a lot more money and also, you know, being more miserable.
Look, you just got to stay, you know, keep your nose pointed north.
That you said something there that you mentioned a lot of like what, like 1 and 2 a.m. nights. Like, I'm sure we've had our fair share of those, and I'm sure you have too.
Oh, man.
That's the kind of thing it takes, man.
I think back and I go, I mean, how did we do that? And I had two children. I mean, and I had one child. He might as well have been a night walker. You couldn't outlast him. You could put him in the bed to 2 a.m. and you could pass out in the chair in there, and you come in there and the cabinets would be open. Like, he'd climbed up on the top of the counter and walked the cabinets just looking for something to snack on, you know. So I don't know how, you know, it's crazy from where, you know, I came through it and started it. Maybe every call maker is, their story's the same. I don't know. I'm sure it isn't, but that's mine, and I'm just lucky, I guess.
Well, I'm excited to kind of get the conversation and kind of talk about, like, from your passion for building this company to, you know, what your passion looked like before the company when it comes to just turkey hunting, and kind of how that journey kind of inspired you to do what you're doing now. But, like, first off, what about specifically turkey hunting makes you so passionate about, not only from like your company standpoint, but also just personally when it comes to like turkey hunting? What does turkey hunting mean to you?
Man, it goes back, as you know, to my father. Man, I, like we were just talking about Columbiana. I was, you know, pretty much raised up there, and my dad, I would go every morning before school. I mean, there was nothing. That was the one thing that my dad loved to do, was turkey hunt. And I was fortunate enough to have a great place to go turkey hunting. Close to the house, literally close to the house. Like, I was 12, 13 years old. I could have drove there. But it was, you know, going with him, experiencing the, you know, hunting turkeys. And then as I got a little older, and I just, hunting is so personal, and the wild turkey is something that's so personal that, yeah, it's not, I mean, I know deer are pretty, a lot of people are the same way about deer, but man, it's just something yelping to a turkey and hearing him answer you, and then figuring out your mess ups, figuring out your wins that you, of course, when you kill the turkey. But it's, I would say my passion was, I had a father who never told me no. When we turkey hunting, hey, every day. If we missed that morning, we went that afternoon. So I've tried to raise my kids the same way and never tell them no. long as they're doing right. And that was the way he treated me. But, man, if you wanted to take something away from me, make me make good grades, it was turkey hunting. I was a straight-A student, if those words come out of his mouth. So, man, it's just something about it. I mean, and it's always consumed me.
Well, I want to talk to you, before we kind of dive a little bit further into your turkey hunting career, early on, like, what were some of those lessons you learned from your dad turkey hunting, and what was, like, his style of turkey hunting versus maybe what you do today?
His style of turkey hunting? I'm sitting here thinking, the first thing when you said that, I instantly one turkey hunt popped up in my mind. But, he, you know, his he wasn't that different. I guess he was real patient. And Matt, I tell you, like, I'm probably the most patient turkey hunter you'll ever be around, because when we guided together, he'd say, man, you just beat them to death till they came. And I would hunt them. If they gobbled, I would stay with them. We'd never make it till lunch. My hunter would be famished by the time we got there. But I was a winner, and I was going to win. So, you know, my dad was patient that way. And, you know, the calls that we had back then weren't the same. I remember getting, watching those Primos videos, learning how to cut, and, you know, everything you wanted to do was cut. And my dad was just a little, you know, he'd get in there with a double reed and he'd go, yep, 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 yep. That's it. And he'd sit and wait. And but that one turkey hunt, I was thinking, we were on a turkey, and it was down there, in Joinertown. You ever heard of Rocky Ridge?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Rocky Ridge Hunting Club, the cemetery was right there, mm-hmm. right down the road from us. And there was this hill, and this turkey was up there. He was gobbling. And I told Dad, I said, I'm going to break off from you. You know, you get over here. Man, I was pouring it to him, cutting every breath. Turkey was gobbling. I heard my dad go, meow, 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 one, just three or four times on a double reed made by Jerry Gardner out of Harpersville, Hard Dixie Game Calls. Anyway, and that turkey literally ran over him. We'd been there an hour. And he killed that turkey. He had hooks on him. And he didn't rub it in. My dad was never like that. But, buddy, you talking about sour? Sour wasn't the word for it. I was a bad loser. But, you know, that was my ride to the hunting club, so I couldn't be too sour about it. But I can see my dad sitting there, you know, just patiently waiting. But the one thing that was cool about my dad, he didn't care. If I wanted to pull out a box and yelp for 30 minutes straight, he'd sit there and he wouldn't say a word. And I've hunted with some guys that just, man, if you made the wrong move, they just take it to the point where you didn't even want to hunt with them. So I've always tried to be like more like my dad with my kids doing that. So I guess I can owe it all to him on my passions.
With your dad, because I'm always curious about these more old school turkey hunters, and kind of that's a common trait with all of them. It seems like is very patient. And it seems like, of course, they were in an era, depending on like when your dad started hunting turkey hunting, that there wasn't just a ton of birds. And it seemed like the skill set from a lot of those guys was more of a patient approach to it, because you didn't know when that turkey was going to come through there. You might have heard them, but they didn't seem like some of those guys had a ton of opportunity with just an absolute ton of birds. I don't know if your dad was like that. But, I mean, what was, like, his background kind of getting into turkey hunting from what you're aware of?
Yeah, you know, he was growing – I remember some stories of him growing up in Livingston, and it wasn't near, you know, the turkeys that there were when I was growing up, of course. But it was a, you know, a more traditional way of hunting. And even if you go back before my dad going to our family farm down in Sumter, my great uncles loved to turkey hunt, and my great uncle, just sitting there thinking about that, you know, I mean, he was that kind of guy that he had a little push button. He'd yelp two or three times, set it down. And I guess that's, you know, with my dad, that's kind of was the fashion. And then, of course, when I finally got really serious into turkey hunting, I guess, you know, we were watching the Primos videos, watching Will do his thing, and the Cuz Strickland and whatnot. So, you know, I can remember listening to my great uncles talking about shooting paper hull shells, you know, killing turkeys. my great uncle John could take he would go out there and pick a peach leaf or a honeysuckle leaf, and he could yelp and cluck with the best of them. And that's what he'd pick him four or five and put them, you know, in some paper towel, moist paper towel, and he'd take them hunting. So, I mean, literally, so as far as traditions, that, you know, I don't have the patience. I have a lot of patience, but my dad he was just glad to be out in the woods, mm-hmm. which showed me more about it than anything, you know.
How important do you think woodsmanship was to not only even like your generation, your upbringing, but even like for them as well?
My dad, being a forester, he was a great woodsman. And he could tell you everything in the woods. He could tell you any bush. And that was his benefit. You know, he was a great woodsman. And that played out on his turkey hunting, just kind of like that hunt. He knew kind of what that turkey was probably going to do. And he let me fail on my own by letting me branch out and go over here, go over there, you know. So, you know, his woodsmanship skills was great. They still are. I mean, to this day, he doesn't care about even having to go hunt, but he loves to just walk and look at the different trees. And, man, you see that deer been blah, 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 eating on that. And so it's a neat thing to watch his you know, just knowledge of the woods and everything. I mean, you can't beat his. I mean, he worked in it all his life for 35 years.
Absolutely. And it seems like those guys, again, guys like that, like they understand how to move through the woods. They understand, you know, and it kind of goes hand in hand with that patience aspect of, you know, sometimes less could be more. And that's kind of maybe how they've learned to be so successful, you know, those kind of groups of hunters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can think of several people in his age group that I hunted with that guy, Jerry Gardner, was one of the best I ever set foot in the woods with. If you had to bet on somebody, you could bet on him, and he could slip away from you. You could be set up with him. He'd slip away from you. You wouldn't even know he's gone. He wouldn't tell you. You just all of a sudden hear something, look, and he'd be gone, and he didn't move 100 yards over here and just let you kind of do your thing. But he was, you know, man, he was a heck of a woodsman, too. He hunted with me growing up in Columbiana, and I always loved to hunt with him because, you know, he was probably his top of the game on doing stuff like that. He understood so much about, you know, the turkey.
I'm curious in talking a little bit about your background and some of those life lessons you learned as a young turkey hunter, you know, especially maybe like back in high school, middle school, getting in high school, mm-hmm. maybe starting to get the opportunity to potentially drive. What were like some of those life lessons you learned as a turkey hunter back then that maybe still applies to you today, or something that's really kind of carried on from that you learned from like those experiences, especially like starting to maybe hunt by yourself more?
Man, I tell you what, turkey hunting is woodsmanship is huge for sure, but you can tell so much by the turkey that you're on what you might need to do, that it's almost like a mind game. And I guess that's one of the things that's cool about it. Like normally your young childhood is full of just mess ups, and then you kill a turkey or two. I mean, I can remember when I killed a turkey or two and thought I knew what I was doing, and then I didn't kill another one the rest of the year. And I was around turkeys all the time. And as you get older, you start recognizing things. Different turkeys have just different personas, just like me and you. And you can recognize things with them. You know, I've hunted turkeys on the National Forest where be on them for 2 or 3 days and just couldn't figure out why you couldn't kill them, and leave my mouth yappers in the truck and grab a trumpet and yelp to him. And instantly it was like a key that unlocked the door. And he came to you like a 2-year-old or a scratch box or, you know, something of that nature, tube call. So in my mind, as you're growing up, it's just full of mess ups. You just got to go. Turkey hunting's something you got to go and fail at to get good at. And then once you kind of you start noticing the little things that's going on in the woods, you know, I can't think of how many times that, you know, like you go get on a turkey and he quits gobbling about 7:30, 8:30. To this day, grown people see it on the National Forest, see it in hunting clubs, they're gone. Man, what if he just sat there another hour? They're not just going to stop gobbling. Now, there's days that they do, but eventually he's going to say something. And that's where the patience falls in that you don't have when you're young. And it's it is so much trial and error. And, you know, when you I just feel like when a turkey gobbles and I create that dialogue with him, I can kind of figure out what's going on or how he's just kind of like how his day's going. And then I can adjust from there. And then the woodsmanship comes in, and then it just amplifies your success. So if you put two of them together, it's unreal. I mean, your success rate goes up. Because, like, when we were guiding, me and Matt, we literally, on Eastern turkeys, we ran pretty much 99% on those farms. Now, they were not high pressured, but now we were turkey hunting them 4 days a week. So maybe you want to call it pressure, trucks, whatever. They're still turkeys. And at the end of the day, there's turkeys that I left there at the end of the season to just, you know, hey, they whoop me. You know, I may kill them the next year. Who knows? I don't know if it's the same turkey or not. But those little things that once you kind of – and especially once you become familiar where you're hunting, man, that just adds to the woodsmanship side.
Do you think it's important, especially for like a newer turkey hunter, to really find some birds, like whether they're on a hunting club, whether they're on a lease, public land, national forest, whatever, find an area to learn it and really try to stick with that area instead of jump around so much to try to build it, that woodsmanship, but also how the birds use that area?
Yeah, I agree with that. Pick you out, you know, whatever you think you can cover. I would pick out at least, you know, 600 to 1,000 acres and become familiar with that. I mean, once guys kind of get that edge of the woodsmanship and the calling, then that's when they leave. And that's kind of like, you know, you're kicking them out of the house. They go over here to the next hunting club and they walk in there and they kill a turkey. They've never been set foot in there. It's where all of that just comes together. And I wish I could say that there's a magic potion that just creates it, but it's not. It is being able to read that turkey, taking that woodsmanship, putting that together, and that's when the magic happens. That's when you don't have to be a great caller, but when you put those two things together, there isn't a turkey you can't kill. You may not kill him, but I guarantee you, you're going to be that much closer to killing him if not having I know you'll have a higher success rate, 110%.
So how's that, how your kind of journey as a turkey hunter then, are those some of the things that helped you out when you like were hunting national forests, for instance? Because like we mentioned before, the first time we talked to you, we talked 100% about national forest stuff.
Yeah.
That patience aspect that you just talked about is something like I can relate with, because I told someone the other day, I've kind of found myself kind of drifting towards that side of, you know, you have people who are like real hard running gun guys and then like real patient mm-hmm. guys. And I've just had a lot of luck where I'll sit there for an hour or so and 45 minutes in, here he comes.
Right. And I'll give you a scenario of how my morning on a National Forest or WMA always starts. It is a little different. I can't tell you how many times I go to a gate, breaks daylight, you don't hear nothing. Nothing. And I'll literally be there till 7:30, 7:45. I don't ever like haul butt to get back into the back, because every time I ever go to the back, they're at the front.
Yep.
So let's start at the front. Start at the gate. So I start at the gate. Generally, if I haven't heard a turkey, you know, by good daylight, and that's usually you know when to move, and it's not when everybody's running around after they haven't heard anything at their gate. That's when I just settle in and I'll go pick me a tree and I'll get away where people don't come by. Look, I don't like people coming by and just staring at me. Like when they go by, you know, even if I'm on my own land, I go over and hide behind a tree. You know, I don't want anybody. I'm turkey hunting. I don't want to talk.
Yep.
So I go over there, find me a little spot, and I'll sit down, put my gun up against a tree. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard a turkey that cranks up. And the later it gets in the season, the later they crank up. It's darker in the woods. Once they hit the ground, they seem to get acclimated. And then once they get acclimated, you know, they'll gobble on the ground a time or two, but that, you know, as the season gets, it's darker in the woods. And anyway, so I can't tell you how many times I found a turkey that way. And of course, I'll ease in there and try to kill him. But if I haven't heard a turkey, I'll go to another spot that I know of. And I don't go to these spots, and I don't owl, I don't crow. I really just listen. And I will park, and I'll sit and listen. If I know a turkey's there, then I might ease on in and just, you know, slip in there. And, you know, the thing about in most of the national forests are hilly. I always keep that high ground. Don't ever leave that high ground. I don't care where you're at. That bottom looks beautiful. But I've always said, hey, if you can keep the high ground, you got, you know, half of it whooped. At least you could make him kind of come up to you and not every time you go to the bottom, they usually side hill you. I mean, because most of these forests and WMAs are pretty open. And but that is normally how my morning will start. And I tell you, I've sat there at those gates and sit there and actually hear a turkey strutting. Because you, on a still day up in those hills and it's so open, man, you can hear a turkey way further than you can walk. And, but the thing about, like, I hear a lot of people about going, hey, I walked 2 miles in. Well, most of these national forests, most of these WMAs, their openings are the roads. That's where they pick gravel. That's where the gravel's at. That's why I guess I've always heard more turkeys around those roads versus deep down in there in the forest or, you know, wherever you're at. And in Alabama, you can't, I mean, down this way, it may be different up north where I know y'all have hunted just about all of them. I don't know of a place you can go 2 miles without crossing a road.
There ain't many places.
Bubba's going to be standing on the other side, so you might as well be ready to hunt with Bubba.
We talk about that all the time. You most of the time in Alabama, and there's places in Georgia we've hunted like this, Tennessee, you're just walking right back into pressure, you know?
You're exactly right. So that's my whole point. Start at the truck. You can hear and you're mobile. And, you know, if you're going to call from a road, don't use a box call. Don't use a mouth call. Use something different. Use a trumpet. Use a tube. I found a lot of turkeys from the road by just easing up to – I would always get – like I'd find me a ridge and I knew there was a big bottom there. I'd just – and Toyota Tacoma, I'd ease up there, park, walk up to the top. Yelp off in the bottom. Didn't hear nothing. Ease back to my truck, going to the next, wherever another ridge or spot I knew I could call from. And they can't hear you on the other side normally, especially in a Toyota. I was just idling through. I was trying to be quiet. But, you know, that can save a lot of legwork in it. There's some places you can get in trouble in some of these places.
Houndstooth Game Calls is your home for turkey calls this spring. Go check them out. They got all the classic turkey calls. You know, they got the pot calls and the box calls and the mouth calls, but they also got a couple really interesting calls. One of them is called the success call, and you just need to go look it up. It's like a box call that you can work with one hand. It's really, really cool. Sounds incredible. They also got the Spurmaster, which is another very unique call that you can get some really unique, clean tones out of. They're going to help you out this turkey season. Use the promo code SOP24 to get 15% off of your order at Houndstooth Game Calls. That's SOP24. Use it at checkout. It helps the podcast.
Man, Mark's Outdoors is your one-stop shop for everything outdoor and shooting related. They're a family-owned business that's been around for over 40 years now, been serving the Birmingham area, but now they have opened their doors to everyone across the United States through their online store. Again, me and Andrew have been using Mark's Outdoors for years now. They have unbelievable supplies of literally anything that we need we can pick up from Mark's Outdoors. They're even carrying different saddle companies, sticks, platforms, the whole nine yards at Mark's Outdoors. And again, if you don't live in Alabama and you don't want to make the drive to Birmingham, you can go over to their website, marksoutdoors.com, and actually shop on their online store to get awesome deals on different products that you may be needing right now and be able to get to you in a very timely manner as well. So give Mark's Outdoors a try. We promise you, you'll enjoy them. They have unbelievable customer service and some of the best guys in the industry. TruLock Chokes has been made in Georgia since 1981 and offering a wide range of chokes, over 2,000 different chokes for all kinds of shooting activities. You might be wondering why you'd want to purchase a TruLock choke, and it's to improve your shotgun performance. Absolutely guaranteed. And as a great example, we have Andrew Maxwell here. And Andrew, you've had some pretty good luck, again, kind of switching out chokes and trying out the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. So, Andrew, what's been your experience so far?
Yeah, I've used the same choke for several years now. I never really thought much of it, and I got the TruLock choke in. I patterned my gun with the first choke at
30 and 50, and then I switched to the True Lock and changed from 30 to 50. And the 50-yard pattern on my gun with the True Lock choke is unbelievable. Like, everybody's jaws were dropping. Like, when we were out there with Mike and Sam, we were all super impressed. I mean, it's throwing a better pattern at 50 now than it was throwing at 40 before my old choke.
And Andrew, you're shooting the Precision Hunter choke from True Lock. It's a great option. Same chokes I have in my shotgun. So guys, if you want to give True Lock a shot this spring, you could head over to truelockchokes.com. That's truelockchokes.com. You can also use the promo code Southern at checkout at truelockchokes.com and save 10% on your order. Again, give True Lock a shot this spring, especially if you're not happy with the performance of your shotgun, and shoot with a more deadly pattern with True Lock.
Now, with the listening thing, where you like to just go out and listen, that's an interesting point, because, I mean, like, we all want to go out and make something happen. You know, we want to go and crank on, like, a glass call or something, or a box call, or a crow or something in the middle of the day. But when you're going out, you're saying you like to go and get on a ridge top and just listen to an area.
Yeah,
is this an area that you've scouted already looking for turkeys?
You know, the scouting part aspect of it, like, first of the season, turkeys are going to be in drainages usually, and then they start moving up, especially around here. That's what I found. So I don't really get in a – I feel like if I get in a drainage, I'm roping myself into that drainage because I can't hear over the hill. Mm-hmm. Can't hear over that hill. I can hear – that way, you know, say north and south. That's it. And if you're standing in the drain, you're looking one way, let's just call it north or in the south. So I will go and listen. I would tell anybody to go and listen if you can. And everything's cool with the WMA or, you know, National Forest, wherever you're at. I mean, it doesn't hurt to know, because the one thing, like, the National Forest doesn't have that many turkeys per acre. I don't feel like it does. I don't feel like it does now. It had more, you know, way back when. I may be wrong now. It may be full of them, but my whole deal was to cover ground, but I would do it patiently. And I had time to do it patiently. I mean, I would leave on a Thursday. We had a company meeting in Greensboro, and I would go to Duncanville, and I'd just slip around through National Forest or whatever, you know. So, I mean, but heck, that's been years ago doing that.
Yeah, that's something that I've actually started doing. I don't know who I was talking to that talked about doing it. It might have been you at, like, a trade show or something, when we were just talking, you know, and going back in an area. I feel like, especially on a pressured place where you're just kind of letting them do their thing, mm-hmm. And they can kind of get fired up on their own, and you just kind of slip in there and take advantage of that. I mean,
yeah.
It works out a lot of times. Like you either see or miss or kill the turkey, it seems like.
You're exactly right. They're always, usually when you hear one, he's pretty hot.
Mm-hmm.
And once he starts to gobbling. But it's just something about it. If you'll spend, you know, say after you left that first morning spot and you go to the next spot, spend 35 minutes just chilling out at the next spot. Don't even say a word. I don't even... leave your calls in the truck, just sit there. You'll be surprised what you'll get in tune to, and you'll hear. But you got to have the patience to do that. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I had a guy come by and be on a turkey, and that turkey would hear that gravel popping, and man, he'd be gobbling every breath to that truck. When that truck stopped, he'd shut up, be quiet, just as quiet as he could be. A guy'd get out, yelp on a box, or, you know, mouth yipper. And then as soon as that truck door closed and that gravel went to popping, he'd go back to gobbling, kill him. And the guy never knew he was there. All he had to do was just sit there. Just patience.
Now, in those situations, you talked about, you've gotten to a point now where you can almost kind of get an idea of how that turkey's feeling, how his day's going and everything.
That's exactly right. That's what
you
I
need
feel
to
like.
Do. Yeah. So, how are you making a decision? Like, when you hear one, let's say it's like 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, and you hear one gobble two or three times, what thought process goes through your head? And I know this is probably a lot of experience, so, you know, it might be kind of hard to explain, but what goes through your head? Like, oh, I need to yelp to this turkey real loud. I need to go and get real close and just cluck and purr him in. Like, what's your thought process?
Well, generally speaking, and me being hunting here in Tuscaloosa County, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure I have the high ground to get to him. I don't want to go low to him. I don't want to have to climb up above him or go around him. I'm going to try my best to come in over the top some form or fashion. And depending, you know, you can yelp at a turkey. If you ever yelped at a turkey and you yelp at him and he you have that pause and then he gobbles and you're like, did he really answer me?
Was he gobbling at me?
Was he gobbling at me or was he gobbling at a blue jay over there? And then you give it a few minutes, you yelp at him and he just, you know, sits there and then he gobbles and you're like, he's trying to figure out if there's something up right now, you know. So that's when I go, hey, maybe I need to do either A, change up a call, pull a trumpet or wing bone out on him and just try him there. Because I've always used that on high pressured areas to kind of take their temperature. I've had turkeys where you could pull that out. You walk that ridge and got in there and you yelp at him and you instantly know he's digging it. I mean, he cuts you off and, you know, those are the things that tell me, hey, either A, I'm going to be here a while or, you know, B, I'm going to kill this joker right off the bat. And, you know, a lot of times it's that way, but taking his temperature, you know, creeks, stuff like that. I can't tell you how many of them that a creek, like where we were on a river, a small river like Knoxby River or even up in Tennessee along the Duck River, that you catch a turkey gobbling his tail off, you know he's by himself, but there's a creek and, the you know, somebody's hunting with you, then they're like, let's see if we can't find another turkey. Man, that turkey's answering me and I'm kind of creating that dialogue. There's a good chance if you play him right, he's going to fly. As long as you don't get too close to him. If you get too close to him, he's just going to sit on the bank. But if you can keep that 150, 100 enough to create that dialogue and make him just, you know, he knows that you're good ways off. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've made turkeys fly the creek just walking towards them like I'm digging them. And then I get up there and hang up on them and then, you know, get to a point where they shut down. They just quit. All of a sudden, they quit gobbling. You know what's fixing to happen. It just happens. And, I mean, not to drag off the subject of what mm-hmm. we're talking about, but it goes to being able to read him and recognize those things that'll help you be more successful. You may be passing up a turkey. We would have passed up several turkeys if it wasn't for, I'm going to hang out right here. He's gobbling. I'm going to stay with him a little while. At least give him, you know, 45 minutes.
Yeah, when you the thing about getting them across the creek, when you said that, a hunt instantly popped into my head where I did not do that. And man, they lured me in, dude. I found myself standing on the side of the river, like yeah. staring over there, like, well, I guess I bumped them.
You know, we were just talking about moving in on him on the ridge, and I know people are successful at it, but even on when he's on the roost, I want to get as close as I can to him. Every time I get close to a turkey like that, I do not kill him. Very rare. If I can create that distance to create that, paint him that picture, I'm that hen that he wants today, it just seems like it works way more often than it does by trying to get close. And I can't tell you how many times I slipped around a ridge on a turkey and he was just right there and I'm going to cluck and yelp at him and he's going to come up there to the top and look, man, that joker never shows up there. He doesn't. Now, they may do it on these northern turkeys. They're a little different. But these here at home, man, they're evil. They're evil. They're the toughest turkeys I've ever fooled with.
Yeah. What is it about something like a trumpet call, do you think, that gets them? Because you're not the first person I've heard that from where, especially on a higher pressured, it doesn't even have to be public, but like a hunting club that's getting hammered, someone busts out the trumpet call, and, you know, I hear a lot of people say they have good luck with it. Is it just because it's a totally different sound than most other guys are making?
It's got to be. That's the only thing I can figure. When I first bought a trumpet, I had actually went over to Georgia and hunted with a guy on some public land, and he yelped a turkey up with me. I was giving him fits about the trumpet. I was like, y'all got those little magic wands around your neck. I said, this is so cute, you know. And let me tell you something. They schooled this old boy over there. They schooled me enough. I called up a guy named Billy Bice. He's one of the best trumpet makers. And I called him up. I said, Mr. Bice, I got to have one of them trumpets. He said, all right, son. He said, that'll be $180. I giggled. I said, did they call you and put you up to like, I put my foot in my mouth so bad. I thought that was a joke. I didn't know those things were like $180. I bought it. I had to. I didn't put my foot in my mouth. I wasn't going to go out like that. But I came back with it to Mississippi, and I'll never forget. I was sitting at a coffee table with a bunch of diggum good turkey hunters and in Mississippi in Scuba, and they were all, man, turkeys are done. Turkeys are done. They weren't killing nothing. In about 3 days, we cleaned them out. Every time we found a turkey, I had the first turkey I caught up with a trumpet. I'll never forget. I popped my head through a hedgerow, and there was two gobblers up there, and I had my son with me. I said, let's back up and get up in these cedars over here, give them a little distance. And I yelped at them with a mouth yapper, nothing. Yelped at them, cut at them with a mouth yapper, nothing. I said, let me pull this trumpet out. I yelped on that trumpet, and they hit me back so hard. And I was like, wow. And gave them a few minutes. Yelped again. They'd cut the distance, and we doubled. And then the next turkey, the next morning, I killed again. And we had a great – so, yes, it is something to do with that sound. Same way with the tube.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, because I've heard guys out west talk about that with elk hunting, where Primos came out with that, like, Hoochie Mama or whatever it's called, and that call is so distinct, and after a while, like,
that they recognize it.
It's like they recognize it. And then someone comes out with something different, and what you said about the guy with the box call on gravel roads, like, that's probably one of the worst things. Like, man, I'm gonna be honest, I don't know,
always a long box, because you can hear those things 3 miles.
Yep. I don't know if I've ever killed a turkey just yelping them up with a box call, you know. And I've done it
with box calls. I like our box call. I use it mainly if I want to locate something and I'm walking. I'm on a hill and I'm walking a ridge or something. But now I have killed a lot of turkeys with a single-sided Lynch box, enough that I wore a thumbprint in the side of it.
That's awesome.
Oh yeah, look, man, that was, yeah, yeah, look, you could take my money, my dog, but you ain't taking my Lynch box. that was it.
Yeah. And I wonder if I've had an experience similar. I've talked about it on the show a couple times where I heard a guy come crunching down this gravel road, walking down the gravel road, but he did the exact same thing. He walked, hit a box call, and then, you know, kept going. And I had a turkey gobbling, and he shut down, and then that guy gets out of earshot, and he started right back up.
Yeah, it is exactly what I'm explaining to you. That's telling me right there, you're a patient guy. You're seeing what I see. And if patience, I mean, knowing when to move and be aggressive is one thing, but knowing when to stop and take it all in and just sit back for a minute, examine everything, that's gonna yield you success. I mean, time and time again.
Yeah, and almost maybe bringing something out in the woods. This is something I've done. Bringing something out in the woods is gonna occupy your time for a little while. So like, I'll bring some kind of lunch, you know, and about 11 o'clock or 10:30, 11 o'clock, I'll sit down and eat the lunch. I might even take my boots off, and I get to a spot that's high up, and I'm like, I'm just gonna be here.
I ain't ever taking my boots off unless my feet are wet.
So I did that one time, and I killed a turkey with my boots off. I got a picture.
Oh, my gosh.
With my socks, Lord, and everything.
My feet are so tender, I don't even take my shoes off till I get up to the edge of the bed.
Oh, Jacob gives me hell for it.
you tender-footed, too.
I'm not taking my boots off. Yeah. No, I'm not taking my boots off. Because, listen,
he's afraid of getting steak bit.
I see these guys get these socks, they put them on, they slip up there to them turkeys. I'm like, dude, you wouldn't. If I take my shoes off, I'm going to be right there until I get them back on.
Well, listen, I told Andrew, he's talked about this before, just sneak up, trying to get close up, you know, some bedded deer or something. I'm like, dude, all it takes is one timber rattlesnake. And I'm like, ain't no way in hell.
Let me tell you something. Look at me. I don't. I'm a big old guy. I'm 294. I don't sneak on nothing. Look, Matt, if one of the best stories ever, Matt was so serious. And we were crawling. He was in here. We had a customer together. And he's like, he's leading the pack. I said, Matt, you just lead the pack. I'm right here. I'm here for whatever I need to do. And he said, get on y'all's knees and crawl. And I'm like, dude, my knees are so bad, I ain't crawling for nothing. But anyway, I go ahead and bite in on it. I'm crawling. And we get up there, and Matt looks at me, and I'm like a foot and a half taller than everybody. Matt's like, get down. And I got my head up like that, and I go... And I said, Matt, that's as low as I'm going, dude. Y'all need to ask him about that. When they said, Matt, you need to get down. I went, I just did my head like that. I said, that's as low as I can go. My head won't go any further. I ain't got much of a neck already. I mean, I'm challenged when it comes to crawling. So, therefore, I've never, you know, that's just like fanning. I had a guy, I was turkey hunting one time. This is when I'd never, I'm not, I don't ridicule people for doing anything legal, but that's by the law. And he wanted me to kill this turkey so bad. He said, man, take that thing and show it to him. I crawled out there on them rocks about 10 yards. And I was like, I'm showing it to him, and I'm like, man, this is for the birds. My knees, there ain't no way I'd have killed that turkey. So I shimmied back. I put it in reverse, and I got back. He goes, you ain't going to do it. I said, man, I ain't built for this. I said, if I can't yelp that. So I have that motto, if I can't yelp him up, I ain't going to crawl. I ain't going to fan. I just ain't built for it.
I mean, you got to get good at calling, man.
Look,
right?
I suckered old Matt one time like that. I got him in an ant bed, though. Y'all need to ask him about the ant bed story. I'm sure he probably forgot about that.
Dude, we need to get both y'all together here one day and record a podcast with
Please
all
do.
That would be fun. That would be a good time.
Because I have so many cool memories of working and guiding turkey hunters. And, man, I look. I'm so thankful for Matt's friendship and what we've built together for our friends. And man, Matt's been integral to this company, and that's why we had the strut marks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Now,
well, Andrew, not to segue, I want to step back to one thing, Lyle, that you mentioned, which was, you know, a lot of times it seems like these turkeys are fairly close to these roads. And, you know, if you hunted anywhere in Alabama, Georgia's like this as well, in the place I've been in Georgia, you know, you got a ton of gravel roads all over the place, dirt roads. And I've seen that. And, like, you'll find strut marks going down, you know, a major dirt road or even a big logging road right behind the gate, 80 yards behind the gate where guys are parking at. And it's happened to me. It's happened to Andrew. It's happened to all of us where, like you said, if you go in, like, I'm going to go in a mile back to this big creek drainage, all this kind of stuff, they're gobbling back by the truck.
Yeah.
Happens almost every time, like you said.
That is where the gravel is. There's gravel. There's usually the side of the road is great bugging. And as, you know, hens start to nest, they nest around those roads too. And I can think of one turkey that I knew he was there, and I went down there to check him about mid-morning. That sucker, he ain't gobbled. I figured he heard me drive up in my truck, and I waited, nothing. And I literally drove past him. I drove down the road, was leaving. I looked up in my rearview mirror, and that sucker crossed the road. I said, that joker knew I was there. That's how in tune they are.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to be on these anywhere.
Well, especially if they're living around those roads. And that's one thing I wanted to bring up is the whole idea of sometimes, kind of going back to the whole less is more, sometimes the idea is like you can walk as far as you want to. And I'm not going to – I've done it. We've all done it, gone 2-3 miles just in a loop or something in an area.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, there's no turkeys here. And then you get back to the truck and there's tracks close to – there's a hunt me and Andrew went on some timber property where we did this big loop on this place. There was a bunch of birds on it, chasing birds around all morning, you know, just not getting close enough. And we came back. I think Andrew shot one next to the truck or close to the truck.
I did. I sure did.
Yeah. But we got back and there's turkey tracks, fresh gobbler tracks between where our trucks are parked right off the side of the main road.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it had just rained the night before. I'm like, he walked through there during daylight right between our trucks.
And I killed him.
Anyways. But it's like, that's something, and with you talking about, it kind of hits more home for me. It's like, yeah, you can find birds super far off the road. Of course, they can be there. But there's sometimes, it's like a lot of other guys are doing that, and it almost like it sucks them closer to the access. And those birds might be a lot more quiet. They're not the ones that burn up the woods all the time. But when they do gobble at one or two times, you should be able to make a play on them if you're in that position and you're not super far back
in there. And they don't roost very far off their roads. I mean, they don't. I had not – one year I didn't hunt any. This was a particular piece of public land. And it had been a year or so that I had not been there. And I told my wife, I said, I'm going to go and hunt so-and-so. So loaded up my truck, and got there, nothing gobble. Sat there for about 30 minutes. I kept hearing – I'm like, there's no way I've taken a year off from this place come here to the exact same spot, and there's a freaking turkey roosted right here to the right of my truck, strutting on a limb, and like no scouting, just going off what years passed. And sure enough, he was 100 yards from my truck, but that's what he was doing. He was flying down, and once it quieted down, he'd come out there and strut in the roads. I've seen him strutting. I mean, they'll strut in the roads, they'll pick gravel, and they'll walk those roads.
Have you had much success around clear cuts, like fresh clear cuts, where they strut out in those fresh clear cuts?
Yes, but from growing up to now, when I was growing up, they didn't do so much herbicide on them. And if you went in there and say you have found a 40-acre clear cut, there'd be four or five turkeys in it. It was a great bugging area, especially late in the year. There'd be four or five. Now you might go find a turkey in it because, I mean, it's biological desert. I mean, literally it is. We're better farmers and we're better foresters, forest managers, and herbicides. You can thank that too.
Interesting.
So, I mean, yeah, they like to get out in it. I'm just stating that the numbers of turkeys I see in the clear cut, using the clear cut, isn't like it seemed like it used to be. And maybe that's just me, but that's just what I've seen. I mean, I made a living for 10 years making them. So I feel like I ought to know a little bit about clear cuts, being around them all the time and so forth. But, yeah, I mean, there's always some turkeys around a clear cut, especially rains or something like that. They get out there. But when you take that greenery away, what's there to eat but strut and pick up some dirt, a little gravel, you know.
Now, on the subject of being kind of like low-key when you're out there and talking about these gobblers next to the road, that kind of made me think about, we're just sitting here talking about how good it is when we sit there and just kind of like take it all in and listen and learn stuff. And that's that turkey's whole life. You know, that's all that he's doing, you know? And so when you kind of think about that and think about maybe your entry into an area and what kind of noise you're making and everything, it's like, are you tipping them off to let them know that you're there?
Oh, yeah. You know you're tipping them off, especially if their home range is right there where they're spending so much time around the gravel road. You know, it's, I mean, public land hunting is different. It is a different animal. You got to go about it different.
How does your calling factor into that specifically? Because we talked a lot about like yelping and a little bit of cutting and stuff. What about like the real fancy calls, like key-keying and doing little feed whines and stuff like that? Jake yelps. Like, do you ever find yourself doing that stuff, or are you sticking more with the basics?
I do. I'm going to tell you, I have killed some turkeys that were straight up. I don't believe if I could have key-key run or do it well. I mean, just do it in general. I don't think I would have killed them. Like, literally. Like, and, you know, I've even had some instances where somebody busted up a flock by accident. Actually, it was a logging crew. The turkeys were roosted over where the logging crew was starting up, they were cutting in a big power line. And they ended up busting them up. And, man, when I started kicking that turkey was on me so quick. Like, I almost didn't even get to kill him. But, yes, I 110% agree on being able to do those different. And Jake yelps even more. Jake yelps, yes. I can't tell you how many turkeys were. I call that the kitchen sink. You know, that's the last, hey, I'm fixing to throw it at them, and you'll be surprised. You can paint that picture of jealousy for them. And, man, they like to fight. I mean, turkeys are fighters. I mean, they whooping other turkeys off the hens and, you know, hit Jakes and fighting with Jakes all the time. But the Jake yelp, if you can learn to do that, I can't tell you how many times that more so than the kiki. I can count on my hand how many times I've done that with kikis. But now, learning how to Jake yelp and creating that picture of something moving in, one of the best tools in the world to do. And it's easy to do to me, on a mouth call. I mean, you're just slowing down a yelp and kind of in your mind thinking, I'm going to deepen the sound. It ain't got to be perfect. I mean, I wouldn't win a contest with a Jake yelp anyway, but I'm not there to win a contest. I got a contest, but it ain't the contest that we're other people thinking.
I mean, honestly, to me, a Jake yelp seems like it'd be easier for people to get than that, like, pretty two-tone hen yelp.
It is. And I tell you, it's easy to do on a friction call too, right in the center. Just take it, cup it up against you, and just like you would run a mouth call, but you're doing it with a peg, right in the center. Just yonk, 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 yonk. Make long strokes with it, with the striker. And man, it sounds as much like a Jake as anything. And it's easy to do on a friction call. It's a little bit harder for me to do it on a slate, but like a glass and that titanium does it as good as any I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. For me.
Now, with the Jake Yelp, if you're saying that's kind of the kitchen sink. If that's kind of like your last ditch effort, what is a situation where you're busting out a Jake Yelp?
Well, it depends. You'll know once you get on a turkey, and you can feel just by listening, you'll know when that turkey's either A, losing interest, or B, he's in a pasture and you can watch him. That's the best. But, here in Tuscaloosa County, we've got so much timbered areas, it's hard to, you're just judging off of what you're listening to. But if that turkey starts to slide, and when I say slide, he's moving off or he's kind of, you got a feeling he's fixing to catch that ridge and be gone. Why not? You're not spooking him by doing it. It's kind of like a deer grunt. You ain't really spooking deer grunt. Dude, I can't tell you how many. You're there. You found a goblin turkey. What if you don't do it? What if you don't grunt at a buck? What if you don't use a Jake Yelp? I mean, it's just a tool. I mean, I have yelped like a hen and watched a turkey run to the next country. So what are we losing?
I want to bring up, when you're talking about the calling, especially on National Forest, I'm curious in talking with you about the tone and the volume that typically you would use. And does that change based off, like, say, like National Forest, where maybe it's fairly high pressure versus if you're on, like, say, like a lease or something that, it's only you and maybe a couple other guys hunting it. Do you change, like, the tone or the volume of some of those calls? I mean, do you, like, bring it back down a little bit on more of those pressure birds? Or how do you like to kind of present that when you're trying to work a bird, especially if it's one that's not just crazy gobbling the roof?
When I find him and he's not gobbling a lot, I'm going to be very timid with him and just see if I can't warm him up to where, I can talk a little bit more looser with him, yelp at him a little bit stronger or whatever. But my calling doesn't really, that's a good question, because when I sit back and think, I can think of turkeys I cut, yelped hard at them, killed them in 20 minutes on the National Forest. And then I can think of turkeys that, I couldn't kill them with nothing but a tube. They just answered a tube. And a tube call is, I'm good with a tube call, but like it's hard to strike a turkey and finish a turkey with a tube. But if they're digging it enough, you're trying to muffle it down, put you kind of cup your hand around it. But I don't really change what I do per se because I'm on public land on that. Now, I may interchange a different type call more than I do that. But I mean, at one time I was hunting public land, I didn't have a trumpet. I had a tube, and it paid off in dividends, but I usually use the tube to find the turkey. Once I found him, I switched to a mouth yapper, and then, learning the different calls just beautified that, and, whether I could have killed that turkey A with a trumpet or not. But I don't really change up my calling style as far as that goes. I mean, I do think that me building calls and yelping so much has helped me. It's got to help you. At some point, there's situations, I believe, that realism, plays a factor. And then I know friends of mine that are excellent turkey calls that they're the farthest from realism, but they're consistent. It doesn't, not that they sound bad, but they don't sound like a lot of people out here. So, I mean, I don't know what y'all think about that, but I don't go in there and just soft yelp and do that. I'm probably a little bit more aggressive than just a soft yelper all the time.
But I guess where you're not as aggressive as with like locator calls or stuff like that, especially in the morning, it's kind of letting stuff play out and trying to, work an area. Well,
it, sitting there thinking about that before, and I didn't mean to cut you off if I did. One thing that I can say as I've gotten older, like a two-reed mouth yipper, people laugh at a two-reed. They go, oh, I got a three or a four-reed. I can get volume and all that. A lot of times when I find a turkey, I like a two-reed, like a bat wing, because I can yelp. Like, once I kind of get that dialogue, a lot of times I'll switch around on the tree. Just I'll sit kind of on the side of a tree where I can turn my body. And once I've got that little dialogue going with him and he's doing his thing and he's trying to make me come and, you know, I'm not budging, he's not budging, I'll cut my hands with that two reed and I can roll it over so low and it sounds like a full blown yelp, but it's at a different tone, like loudness. Let's say, you know, it sounds like I moved 60, 70 yards. I can't tell you how many times I have pulled turkeys that were hung up, and my son is like one of the best. That dude can yelp so low. I've seen turkeys tuck their wings and drop down and come down a 40-foot bluff and you blow their head away at 20 yards. But that is probably more of a useful tool to me than anything is being able. And you remember me telling about Jerry Gardner? Jerry had that same yelp. He it may not be the same call, but he was, man, you can throw your voice with soft, it's soft, but it's just like if I were to do, say, a loud, strong four-note yelp. Think about being able to, you got to put a lot of air across a three-reed call. Well, a two-reed call, I can do the same thing, but I can do it a lot lower. And then when I cut my hands, you can tell just me and you talking how much all of a sudden that changed. Well, when you change and do that and you turn, there's a holler right there. It sounds like you moved 100 yards. I mean, that's why I could never pin Mr. Gardner in the woods, because he would yelp like that, and then I'd turn around and look, and, you know, I'd be looking for him, like, sounds like I thought he sat down over there, and he'd be over here, or he'd be right there, and, you know, so you couldn't pin him. And that is a cool tool. I mean, you can't beat that. In my opinion, people may laugh about that, say, oh, this nonsense. Well, it's nonsense till you do it.
Well, it's a skill set. And Kenny kind of goes back to the woodsmanship. It's like a skill set that you can bring out when you need to. Again, act like you're putting more distance between you and that gobbler.
Right. That's right.
So like, oh, that hen's walking away from me. I got to go investigate.
You know, the one thing I noticed when I started doing, when I really kind of started playing the turkey that way, I stopped shooting. I, you know how a turkey, 9 times out of 10, what does he do? He comes in there and you kill him at about 40 yards, 30, something like that. They don't never walk over you strutting at 10, 15 yards in Alabama. Well, let me tell you something. When you can throw your voice a little bit like that with a two-reed yelper, you'll find out they'll get a lot closer because they can't pinpoint you. They had you there for a minute while you were creating the dialogue, and then all of a sudden you just changed the dynamics of the whole thing, and it sounded like you moved down there, and now you got to know when to quit. And it's not giving him, you know, playing him for 30 minutes that way. A lot of times of the turkeys that we've killed, I might go off and then come back, but I'm just doing it with cupping my hands, making it roll over, and then, you know, 10, 15 minutes, it ain't working out, and I might actually come back, you know, turn yelp towards him. Y'all have seen people, you know, do stuff like that, I guess. But those are some of the things, man, that kill turkeys. They kill turkeys here.
It's a combination, it seems like, of all those different things, you know, like being able to slip around and pay attention to your surroundings and read that turkey and know when you need to make that kind of call, and knowing the lay of the land. Mm-hmm. You know, you got that holler behind you, and, you know, I don't know, maybe you're making that turkey think that you went down in there, and he's like, well, I'm just going to go get on the side of that thing and look down there at her, or whatever he's going to do. And it's kind of like all these things come together, and that's what makes a really good turkey hunter.
You're exactly right. And it's almost too much to put into a podcast. I don't know how anybody can learn this without, just like what we were talking about, you know, getting started turkey hunting. The only way you can do it is fail and listen to other people. Once you kind of have mentors and stuff, man, they'll lead you to the water. I mean, you'll find a friend that's a little bit better than you, has a little bit better edge. You may be a better duck hunter, but he's a better turkey hunter. And those little things, that's just like this year. Hey, I thought I was a heck of a duck hunter, and I went with a guy named Jim Ronquist.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you something.
That guy,
I didn't know nothing. But by the second day, I had that jugger. He had me going just right. We were good. But, yeah, I mean, there's somebody out there that knows more than you. There's somebody out there that knows more than me. But these are the things that I've noticed that work for me. And the only way that you can learn those things to get your little groove is to get out there, chase some turkeys, fail a little bit, succeed a little bit, and then put it all together, and then you got something.
Absolutely. Lyle, we're sitting at an hour 8 here, so we'll get close to a point of wrapping it up. But I want to get into something. By the time this episode drops, it'll be almost turkey season in Alabama. It might be turkey season in Mississippi. I don't know exactly when we're going to drop this, but it'll be getting close. It'll be okay. Mid-March. So thinking like mid-March time frame, what are you doing to get prepared for turkey season? Like, are you going out and listening every morning? Are you going and looking for scratch? Like, what are you trying to do to get ready for opening day?
Well, being a turkey call maker, one of the not-so-lovely things about it is that I don't have a whole lot of time to do scouting anymore. And it's I'm lucky I do, and I guess that's because I want to keep this business going, keep it going, keep everybody happy, shipments going out. But if I'm preparing, preparing for turkey season is more or less me going, hey, guess what? Turkey season's in. I'm going in the morning, and I know of a ridge that I can at least find a turkey off of, and I have some history with it. Now, if I back up and say I didn't have this job, I would be out there. I'd be looking for scratching. I'd especially be looking for scratching low because they're in the acorns and stuff right now, what's left. And they're going to, and listen, mark those spots as you think. You know, as the season goes, turkeys start getting more up higher and on those hills and out of those bottoms and stuff. But historically, just like over there in Mississippi, we had that big Knoxby River right there, man. Turkeys, when opening day came, you could hear turkeys for miles down that river. There wouldn't be nothing in the hills. By the end of the season, those jokers were all around those hills and ag fields and stuff, and everything changed, and few turkeys down there on the river. So, you know, me getting prepared, you know, is different for everybody else, I guess. That's probably, you know, I hate to make it a dull subject, but it's, you know, I guess, you know, growing up and stuff, when you wanted to get prepared, we were so in tune with the land. It was just a thing. I mean, that was just normal. Hey, let's go out. My dad would like, let's ride out there and ride around. And, you know, he'd have him a cold one. And I'd learn to drive the truck out there, you know. And, oh, there's a turkey. Well, I know he's going to be here at the slab. And then we'd see a turkey over here towards the graveyard. And, you know, that was consistent. I see people on YouTube, they're beating the bushes and stuff. But turkeys are so vocal. You know, unless you need to know the land, then, yeah, walk it. But I'm usually going to a listening spot that I can hear before season. And then, you know, there's mornings that I don't get to hunt, but I might run out there and listen for a few minutes and just take note. You know, if I've got a spare minute, and then usually I run late because I break the rule and I go ahead and go hunt. If it's turkey season.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, Lyle, we appreciate you joining us for this podcast and inviting us down to the shop and be able to kind of do this again. I'm excited to get this podcast out for the listeners to kind of, you know, learn a little bit more about you and again, kind of your background when it comes to hunting, because it's fascinating. Guys like yourself who, you know, you've had success a bunch of different places, but specifically like what you've learned and applied on the National Forest and even some of these higher pressure, you know, hunting clubs and stuff you've hunted. It's super fascinating, and definitely we'll have to have you back on and again, get Matt in here as well to kind of talk to you some of these different stories.
Please, we've got to do one, me and Matt. There's so many good stories there. And, you know, Matt's precious to my family. I mean, he is family to me. So, That's I can't wait to hear his podcast too.
Oh, it's a good one. He knocked it out of the park. But
yeah, he did.
Lyle, as a point of wrapping up, if anybody's interested in learning more about Houndstooth game calls or anything else y'all are doing, how can they follow along with you guys on social media, but also y'all's website?
Yeah, make sure we have a Facebook page that we keep going every day and throughout the year, and then of course Instagram and houndstoothgamecalls.com on the website. And then if you need something deeper than that, get on there and call me. Perfect. I mean, I'm here.
Absolutely. Well, Lyle, thanks again for joining us for the podcast. Listeners, appreciate y'all joining. Again, if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you share it with a buddy. And good luck to you guys this season. We'll catch y'all back here for the next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast.
You guys seem to really have enjoyed over the last year where we've went to a Q&A format every Thursday on the show where we answer some listener questions. Now, some of the most common ones that we get have to do with gear, but also how to find a good hunting buddy. You know, I'm really lucky to have a hunting buddy like Jacob. We've been on a lot of incredible hunting trips together over the years, and it's just nice to have somebody that, you know, is always down to go on that trip that you've always wanted to go on, or who'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go get that gate before someone else does on public land with you, whatever the case may be. And like I said, we get a lot of questions on how do you find, you know, a group of people who enjoy that same thing so you can kind of network and make some connections. The Mobile Hunters Expo is the place to do that. Y'all heard us talk about it last year, and guess what? This year it's happening in Dalton, Georgia. We're going to be there June 28th through the 30th. We're going to be there all 3 days. We're going to have a booth. You can come talk to us. We talked to a lot of you guys last year, had a ton of fun. So looking forward to that again. But guys, I'm telling you, this is the place to come network. And there's going to be a ton of you guys there. A lot of Southern Outdoorsman podcast listeners are going to be at this show. And actually, Friday, June 28th, there's going to be an after-hour social after the expo. So what better place to go kind of intermingle, hang out with a bunch of like-minded people, and probably pick up a couple new hunting buddies. So you guys don't miss it. It's June 28th through the 30th. I'm telling you, if you listen to this podcast, this is an event you need to be at. Now, we'll see you guys at the Mobile Hunters Expo June 28th through the 30th in Dalton, Georgia.